Theory had it that when the process was complete, Lalonde would have developed a burgeoning industrial-stroke-technological society, with the LDC as the largest across-the-board shareholder in the planet's commercial enterprises. That was when the real profits would start to roll in. At the start of the preliminary stage, cargo starships delivered 35 dumpers into low orbit. Squat, conical, atmospheric entry craft packed full of heavy machinery, supplies, fuel, ground vehicles, and the prefabricated sections of runway. The dumpers were aero-braked below orbital velocity, and one by one began their long, fiery descent curve towards the jungle below. They rode the beacon signals down to land beside the Julif's southern bank, spread out in a line 15 kilometers long. Each dumper was 30 meters high, 15 meters across its base, weighing 350 tons fully loaded. Small fins around the base steered them with reasonable accuracy through the atmosphere until they were 700 meters above the ground, by which time they had slowed to subsonic speed. A cluster of 8 giant parachutes lowered them for the final few hundred meters, bringing them to a landing which resembled a controlled crash to the small flight control team watching from a safe distance. They were designed for a one-way trip. Where they landed, they stayed. Construction crews followed them down in small VTOL space planes and began unloading. When the dumpers had been emptied, they formed environment-proof accommodation for the crew's families and offices for the governor's civil administration staff. The jungle surrounding the dumpers was levelled first, a chop-and-burn policy producing a wide swath of desolated foliage and charred animals. A spaceport clearing followed. After the runway grids were assembled, a second wave of workers arrived in the McBoeings, along with more equipment. This time they had to build their own accommodation, using the profusion of logs the earlier crews had left scattered across the ground. Rings of crude wooden cabinets sprang up around all of the dumpers, looking as if they were rafts floating on a sea of mud. Stripped of its scrub cover, subject to continual heavy plant traffic and Lalonde's daily rains, the rich black loam was reduced to a fetid-smelling sludge which was over half a meter thick in places. The rock crushers worked continuously throughout the planet's 26-hour day, but they could never supply enough chippings to stabilize the expanding city's quagmire roads. The view from the scuffed and algae-splattered window of Ralph Hilch's office on the third floor of the dumper, which housed the Kulu Embassy, showed him the sun-soaked timber-plank roofs of Durringham spread out across the gently undulating land next to the river. The conglomeration was devoid of any methodical street pattern. Durringham hadn't been laid down with logical forethought. It had erupted like a tumour. He was sure even Earth's 18th-century cities had more charm than this. Lalonde was his fourth off-world assignment, and he had never seen anything more primitive. The weather-stained hills of the dumpers rose above the shantytown precincts like arcane temples linked to the ramshackle buildings with a monstrous spiderweb of sable-black power cables slung between tall poles. The dumper's integral fusion generation provided 90% of the planet's electrical power, and Durringham was completely dependent on their output. By virtue of the Royal Kulu Bank taking a 2% stake in the LDC, Kulu's Foreign Office had acquired the dumper for its staff as soon as the start-up phase of colonization was over, ousting the governor's Aboriginal Fruit Classification Division in the process. Ralph Hilch was grateful for the political arm-twisting maneuver of 20 years ago. It allowed him to claim an air-conditioned office and a tiny two-room apartment next door. As the commercial attaché, he was entitled to a bigger apartment in the embassy's residential block outside, but his actual position as head of station for the Kulu External Security Agency operation on Lalonde meant he needed the kind of secure quarters which the old dumper, with its carbetanium structure, could provide. Besides, like everything else in Durringham, the residential block was made of wood and leaked something rotten. He watched the near-solid cliff of silver-grey rain sweeping in from the ocean, obscuring the narrow verdant line peeping above the rooftops to the south, which marked the boundary of the jungle.